Thompson Guitars makes handcrafted instruments in Oregon and is a proud sponsor of the Travis Book Happy Hour. Their guitars are built with select tone woods, including Brazilian rosewood. Go to pktguitars.com for more information about their different models and appointments available from their custom shop. Hey, Happy Hour listeners. Are you ready for summer festival season? Elevate your festival look with Sunhye Shades. Whether you're dancing to your favorite bands or kicking back to soak up some rays, Sunhye sunglasses are your sidekick for any adventure. And for a limited time, you can get 20% off your order using code HAPPYHOUR. Get your new go-to faves today at sunheist.com. That's SUNHEIST.com.
That is still the most important thing, is just to find what inspires you and chase that. And it's a daily battle. What inspired me yesterday may not inspire me today.
Welcome to the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. I'm Travis Book. This episode is brought to you by Thompson Guitars, makers of fine instruments, handmade with love in Sisters, Oregon. The podcast is presented by Americana Vibes and The Bluegrass Situation, and our show is part of the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can dive into all things roots music anytime at thebluegrasssituation.com. Trey Hensley is simply the most ferocious acoustic guitar player I've ever encountered. His attack and control of the guitar is unrivaled and left me in awe. He is, however, also just about as kind and as humble as an East Tennessee man can be. I had a great time playing music with and getting to know more about this musical titan, and I'm really happy to make this podcast available. This episode was recorded live at 185 King Street in Brevard, North Carolina on November 14th, 2023.
Live from 185 King Street, the soul of Brevard, North Carolina, it's the Travis Book Happy Hour. With special guest, IBMA Guitar Player of the Year, Trey Hensley. And now your host, Travis Book.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Bill. And thank you, Trey, for being here. Really excited to play some music with Trey and excited to be here with y'all tonight. So without further ado, let's do it.
I got a 68 Camaro with four on the floor. Rebuilt carburetor, man, that thing will roar. It's a real head turner, it can fly and it can cruise. Well, it can do damn near anything, but it can't outrun the blues. Well, I've been to foreign countries and across all 50 states. I've met dignitaries and I've stamped license plates. I'm no stranger to the highway, going anywhere I choose. But there's one thing I've come to know. Well, I can't outrun the blues. I feel them hiding in the darkness and shining in the light. Every minute, every hour, they ain't far out of sight. Well, I thought I could get past them, but no matter what I do, well, I can't outrun the blues. Sometimes I think I'm haunted, feeling spirits from beyond. They show up to remind me of all that I've done wrong. Just when I think I shake 'em, your memory flips a fuse. It'll hold me down forever, 'cause I can't outrun the blues. I feel 'em hiding in the darkness and shining in the light. Every minute, every hour, they ain't far out of sight. Well, I thought I could get past them, but no matter what I do, well, I can't outrun the blues. Yeah, I thought I could get past them, but no matter what I do, well, I can't outrun the blues.
Thank you all very much. Well, it's great to be here tonight. Thanks to Travis for having me out here. That was a brand new song that I've never done before, so I figured we might as well do it.
I just heard someone in the audience, Steve goes, "Good luck, Travis." Same thoughts, exactly. Thank you.
I will do an old Bo Diddley tune now.
You can't judge an apple by looking at the tree. You can't judge honey by looking at the bee. You can't judge a daughter by looking at her mother. And you can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Can't you see? Oh, you can't judge me. Well, I look like a farmer, but I'm a lover. And you can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Sugar by looking at the cane. You can't judge a woman by looking at a man. And you can't judge a sister by looking at her brother. And you can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Can't you see? Oh, you misjudge me. Well, I look like a farmer, but I'm a lover. And you can't judge a book by looking at the cover. By looking in the pond, and you can't judge a right by looking at the wrong. Well, you can't judge one by looking at the other. And you can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Can't you see? Oh, you can't judge me. Well, I look like a farmer, but I'm a lover. And you can't judge a book by looking at the cover. I look like a farmer, but I'm a lover. And you can't judge a book by looking at the cover.
It's called Brown Eyed Women.
Gone are the days when the ox fall down, picked up the old plow, the fields around. Gone are the days when the lady said, please, well, Jenny Jack Jones, won't you come to me? 1920, when he stepped up to the bar, drank from the dregs of the whiskey jar. 1930, when the wall caved in, he made his way selling red-eyed gin. Brown-eyed women in red grenadine, the bottle was dusty, but the liquor was clean. Sound of the thunder with the rain pouring down, it looks like the old man is getting on. Delilah Jones was a mother of twins, two times over the sins. Raised eight boys, only I turned bad. I didn't get the lickings that the others had. Brown-eyed women in red grenadine, the bottle was dusty, but the liquor was clean. Sound of the thunder with the rain pouring down, and it looks like the old man is getting on. Tumbled down shack in Bigfoot County, snowed so hard that the roof caved in. Delilah Jones went to meet her God, and the old man never was the same again. Daddy made whiskey and he made it well, cost $2 and it burned like hell. Like could he greet his fire and still, around. Gone are the days when the lady said, please, well, Jenny Jack Jones, won't you come to me? Yeah, Jenny Jack Jones, won't you come to me?
I do have to mention a funny story about Brown Eyed Women, that we recorded that song and had Vince Gill sing on it, and which was very cool. You know, it was just awesome to have Vince come in and sing on it, and we sent him the song, and he came into the studio, you know, and just killed it, one take, crushed it, you know, and he came out and he was talking to me and just insinuated that I wrote it because he has no idea who the Grateful Dead are, evidently. And he was like, you know, I really like this song. You know, when did you write it? And I kind of laughed and just thought he was joking. And he said, you know, what's it about? And I was like, yeah, it's just about things, you know. And I was kind of starstruck, and I didn't really say much. And so I just loved the idea that somewhere out there tonight, Vince Gill thought I wrote Brown Eyed Women. We'll do one now that I actually did write. It's I promise. Wrote this one with a friend of mine out in East Tennessee. This guy named Bobby Starnes. Bobby's got his fan. Oh, it's John. All right, that makes sense.
Oh, that's classic. Oh yeah, someone knows him. Oh, it's John.
So, if anybody else out there knows Bobby, this is one he wrote. Yes, one called The Back Streets Off Broadway.
Well, he thumbed his way to Nashville back in 88 with a dream and a guitar to his name. Well, he could sing like Elvis. He could hardly wait. He could almost taste the fortune and fame. But Music City is a town that can knock you down and leave you in total despair. It can tear you apart and rip out your heart and turn your dreams into nightmares. Now his home is on the back streets off Broadway, living out his dreams on nickels and dimes. When the road told him no, he had nowhere to go but the back streets off Broadway and out of his mind. Well, he tried and he tried, and the years they went by until he landed between second and third. He's still there today, making his way and singing for all that he's worth. Now his home is on the back streets off Broadway, living out his dreams on nickels and dimes. When the road told him no, he had nowhere to go but the back streets off Broadway and out of his mind. When Music Road told him no, he had nowhere to go but the back streets off Broadway and out of his mind. He's on the back streets off Broadway and out of his mind.
When's the last time you did an interview on stage in front of people?
Long time, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe never.
Oh, it's weird. Check this out. You're going to love this. Don't worry. They're cool. They're cool. So let's just start at the beginning. Where did you grow up?
East Tennessee.
And you still live in East Tennessee?
I do. I lived in Nashville for a 10-year span. And then, moved back to East Tennessee. Missed it and wanted to get back there.
It's nice up there. Did you have a musical family? Was music happening in the house?
Not really. I mean, my dad played banjo when I was a kid, and he kind of quit. You know, one day I just remember he never really took it very far. You know, he played a version of Cripple Creek and put it in the case and never picked it up again. You know, but my granddad really liked music, and had a big record collection of mostly old country and some bluegrass. So he had the only bluegrass that he had was, he had a couple Bill Monroe things, but he had almost everything Flatten Scruggs ever did. And and he had a bunch of Hank Williams and George Jones and Merle Haggard. And so I just grew up around that. And my parents took me to a lot of bluegrass festivals. And that's kind of where I started wanting to play guitar, was went to this festival out in East Tennessee called Slagle's Pasture. And saw Jimmy Martin and Charlie Waller.
and decided that's what I wanted to do.
That's incredible. And you picked up the guitar soon after that? How old were you? How old were you when you started playing?
10.
10?
Yep.
That's a good head start. I was going to ask, who's the first musician who really caught your attention? Was it Jimmy Martin?
Jimmy was great, but I would really have to give the credit to Charlie on that, because he was the first person that I saw actually take a guitar solo, and he played, I believe it was under the Double Eagle, and took a big guitar solo. And that was, other than that, I'd seen a lot of people strumming, you know, doing the strummy thing, and that was okay, but seeing somebody play a guitar break was like, hey, that's what I'm going to do for every song ever.
And
so far, so good.
And you know, just this year, I mean, I remember, I noticed when Bill mentioned it in the introduction, you kind of shook your head a little bit. But you are, in fact, it is just a fact, you are the IBMA, International Bluegrass Music Association, has voted you and determined that you are the guitar player of the year. What do you think about that?
I demand a recount. No, I was very shocked. I was actually there, and I'm as shocked today as I was then. I'm still shocked about it. No, it was just, it's an honor to be mentioned with, you know, with four of my favorite guitar players. And I said that then, and I mean it. I truly mean it. And, you know, I sat there for at least a good 5 seconds after they called my name, because I was clapping for somebody else. And it was really cool. It was just very special. Like, again, you know, it's, I guess, my third or fourth year being nominated, and which I was just shocked about. That was always, I grew up going to the IBMA award show and being a part of IBMA, and just always see those names every year, and never ever thought I would be even on the five.
Right.
So now I've got an award that's got my name on it. That's pretty cool.
You do, and well deserved. So, you know, instead of talking about you as a guitar player, I'm curious, like, you know, part of learning, growing, becoming excellent, becoming what other people determine to be the best. Part of that process is an appreciation for what other people are doing, and what are the qualities in other guitar players that you find sort of most compelling, or what's most important to you when you're listening to someone else play guitar? What captures you?
You know, I mean, I just remember the first time I heard Tony play, and there was just this sort of, with Tony's playing, there's this intensity that I think came across more from the blues side of things. You know, that was Tony's influence, was a lot of jazz players and you know, Clarence, who was influenced by the blues. And and so there was always that authenticity with that, you know, that just really struck me. And the fact that it always sounded like him, you know, no matter how many people try to play those licks, you can tell they're not Tony. And, you know, it's a great, I play them. I love them. If I could do nothing else but play Tony Rice licks, I'd be the happiest guy on the planet. But, you know, I want to do my own thing too. But that always struck me. Or just listening to Earl Scruggs play the banjo or play the guitar, you always knew it was him. Or Doc Watson, you know, or Mother Maybelle. There was always those people that played, and you immediately, within a few seconds of hearing their instrument, knew it was them. And that really got me. That's what got me inspired. Because, you know, going back to Jimmy Martin, if you listen to any of those records, that intro to Freeborn Man, that's the hardest anybody's ever hit an acoustic guitar, ever, before then or ever since. But it's Jimmy. You could tell within 2 seconds that it's him. And so I think that authenticity is what I've always strived for, you know?
Yeah, and that's probably, I mean, the broader question is sort of like, what, you know, you've played with a lot of people, and my assumption is that you'll probably play with a lot more people. You know, you're young, relatively speaking, and
what's that mean?
Well, you know, you're not a child. But you're younger than me, I think. My point is, like, you probably, I have a sense that you're going to be around playing guitar for a very long time, and we really hope that you are. And I also have a sense that part of that process is you're probably going to play with a lot of people. You played with a lot of people already, and you're the kind of musician that other musicians want to play with. So besides authenticity, what are you looking for when what excites you about playing with other people?
Yeah, I think there's that spontaneity too. Like us, I mean, you know, we've gone over these songs maybe once, and we've already played them wildly different than we went over them before. And I love that. That's really cool. And I think that, you know, like in this duo that I'm in with Rob, we've done a lot of these songs for a long time, but they're different all the time. And I think there's a spark when you play with somebody else that you don't get, you know, when you're picking by yourself. There's an inspiration that, you know, you kind of feed off the other person. And, yeah, I mean, there's so many great players right now. You know, so many great guitar players and banjo players and mandolin players and bass players and everything. You know, that's inspiring in and of itself. But I think there is that certain spark whenever you play with somebody else. I know, you know, we've done a lot of shows with Tommy Emmanuel, and that's one of those guys that, like, every time you play with him, your level gets brought up a little bit because you have to. You know, his level's brought up, so it's like he brings you up with it. And, you know, I get that with playing with other musicians. If I stayed in my house or in my studio and played just guitar by myself all the time, I'd get my own groove, and it would suck, you know. So, you know.
Well,
I don't want that.
Probably not, but it wouldn't have what you're looking for.
I would lose interest in it very quickly.
Yeah. That makes sense. How do you decide? You know, you write songs, but you also, like, the songs, when you sent me the song list for today, that's usually how this goes with these shows, is I reach out to somebody, and if they've made the mistake of agreeing to do the show with me, then the impetus is on them to sort of tell me kind of what we're going to play, and that gives us sort of a starting point. And when you sent me the song list, I was just like, yeah, you know, everything. It's funny that a lot of these songs are songs that I do myself, you know. And how do you decide... How do you decide what songs to play?
it's totally random. It's like it when I sent you these, I thought, well, the day of, we'll probably think of something else. That, you know, and I kind of like that too. You know, I'm influenced by a lot of different music, and right now my main gig has been with Rob, so that's where my bulk of knowledge comes from the past few years. But it's you know, when we go over a set list, usually we have a beginning and an end. And we have some song, you know, we'll have 3 pages worth of songs on the floor, but it's just calling them out, you know?
Yeah.
And, but as far as choosing what songs to do, it's usually like I'll sit around and play something at the house, you know, and then bring it out on the road, and we might do it at a sound check. Or I might just call it during the show, you know? And we'll see if it's good or not.
And you go for it.
We'll try it in real time. But there's something with that too that's like, you know immediately if it's going. There's during sound check, it's easy to say, "Oh, that'll be okay. That'll be good." But if you're out in front of people, it's like, "Oh, that's not okay." And usually, it's within the first 10 seconds of a 6-minute song, you know. But yeah, it's. It kind of is hit or miss, you know. And we haven't, there haven't been a lot of songs that we've immediately vetoed. There have been a few, but you know, and from going into the studio, you know, I've written a lot of songs here recently, and that's been something new. Is that I've written all through the years, but never a lot. You know, it might be 1 or 2 songs a year, and in probably the past 5 years, I've written, you know, at least the last 2 of our records, the majority of it. Written or co-written, and then, you know, I've written enough material for a solo record and mine and Rob's new record that we're working on, and so that's a different beast all in itself.
What sort of precipitated that change, kind of that sort of shift into songwriter mode?
You know, I don't know. It's something, like I say, I always did it, and we did those first couple records,
And I actually had songs kind of stockpiled, but I didn't want to do them because, you know, we're kind of jamming and we're playing a lot of Merle Haggard tunes or you know, Tony Rice stuff. And it's like when you play those songs and they're so great, it's hard to say, well, here's this little crappy song that I wrote. Let's play it after, you know. It's that whole, you know, you're looking at a mountain from a valley and it doesn't work. And so whenever I got actually brave enough to, you know, play my own songs, and I think I'm still working on that. It's like I'll write something and just sit on it because I'm like, I don't know if that is good or not. And that's been, you know, there's a lot of these songs off, I guess, World Full of Blues were kind of like that. I'd written them and just didn't do anything with them. And so then I played them for everybody, and we, you know, ended up kind of liking them and putting them on the record. And I think that it's always been there. It's just been something that I'm getting more comfortable with. And I've co-writing has helped that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, just getting with other people and throwing out ideas. And, you know, I was recently inspired by another songwriter who said that, you know, when he sits down to write with somebody else, he schedules time for like 10 songs. Because the chances of them writing one good song right out of the gate is probably not going to happen. But if they write 10, they'll probably get one good song. You know, and I've come to understand that, like, not every song has to be great. Sometimes it's good just to write it, get it out of your head, and be like, okay, immediately shred it.
Yeah, do you feel like some? It's like sometimes it's almost like, it's like if that song doesn't come out.
Yeah, I did. I heard a Tom Petty quote where he said they gave up on songs whenever they weren't easy to write, because if they weren't easy to write, then they weren't worth doing. I don't know about that. I mean, I've worked on songs that, you know, probably took me a long time, and I think I like them. So
yeah.
I don't fully buy into that, but there is something to it. I mean, there's a song, Both Ends of My Rainbow, that we're probably going to do here in a little bit, that I wrote, you know, on a plane with no guitar and finished it in whatever time it took to write it down and never changed a word.
And that, and with the melody was there?
It was there, 100% there, you know.
Oh, and that's so cool, isn't it?
There was another song, That's What Leaving's For, that we did on a couple records back that was like that. It was, you know, and I didn't have a guitar, but it was all there. I knew it how it went. I knew everything about it. So I assumed it was stolen from somebody. It's too late now. We've already recorded it.
That's so
don't come forth.
That's so funny. I read somewhere someone asked Paul McCartney. They said, you know, how did you write all these? You know, your songs are so memorable. How did you write them? And he goes, well, we didn't have any way to record. We had to remember them.
Yeah.
He said if I woke up the next day and I didn't remember it.
Yeah.
Then it wasn't there anymore, you know? It's like the song had to be memorable or it wouldn't be there.
Yeah, you know, and I think there's a lot, you know, everybody can get caught in the minutia of, you know, changing things or making it not sound like something else. But there's a good quote from Merle Haggard. You know, he was, somebody asked him, well, you know, this something about one of these lawsuits where another songwriter sued another songwriter for, you know, stealing their song. And he said, well, that'd be easy to do because the last original thing that was ever written was Stardust.
Yeah, I was showing the band a song on the bus the other day, and I played, like, there's like this sort of signature lick, and Jeremy goes, isn't that the same lick from that other song you wrote? And I was like, no, maybe. I don't know. I was like, I don't know, but that's the melody. That's how it goes. Yeah. I'm like, maybe we should get rid of the other one. I don't know.
That's right.
If you're enjoying this show with Trey Hensley, check out my tribute to Tony Rice in episodes 10 and 11, episode 2 with John Stickley, episode 25 with Jim Lauderdale, or episode 26 with Andy Falco. Thanks for listening, and after the show, be sure to leave a review. Now back to the show.
When you're not on tour, when you're at home, I see videos of you playing from your kitchen table. What's a typical day look like for you?
You know, it kind of varies. It's been so busy here recently that a typical day is not so typical. It's like it changes all the time. I mean, I have an 8-year-old daughter, and so there's a lot of family stuff that I catch up on when I'm not on the road. And I teach every now and then, you know, and so there's some of that. But I still try to play every day. And sometimes those videos, you know, it's just me. It's an excuse for me to play. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really like doing social media stuff, you know, but it's, I know that, you know, you have to do it. It's 2023 and you can't live on a flip phone anymore, but, you know, so it keeps me in check. It sort of gave me an excuse to actually play my guitar. And I still like playing my guitar. You know, that's the fun thing about it is that it's, you know, there's long days on the road, as we're both aware of. You know, it's a lot of traveling, and it'd be easy to just go home and not touch a guitar. You know, it's like most musicians have a lot of the winter months kind of slows down a little bit, and it would be easy to put a guitar in the case and just never play it. But I don't want to do that. I try to play, and I try to learn something every day. And I think part of that was going back to Tommy. We were on a tour with him a couple years ago, and I mean, I would consider him the greatest guitar player I've heard. You know, it's like as far as he can play every style that you can think of, and is very, you know, knowledgeable about everything. But his work ethic really inspired me, because it was, you know, at 6 o'clock on the bus every morning, you could hear that guitar, and it was all day, and then play the show that night. And it's like, you know, at that point, do you not know enough? You know, you've beat us all.
Yeah, you're the best, man. Yeah.
You don't have to do this.
You can go out to breakfast. You can chill. Just drink a cup of coffee.
But it is inspiring. It's like, so I started keeping, I do keep a guitar out at all times. And, you know, I probably just intermittently grab it throughout the day. And that's kind of how I write, too, is just, you know, get inspired and try to write something. And there's no set rules with it. Mm-hmm. That kind of makes my brain shut off. If I'm like, okay, I'm going to practice for an hour each day. I will practice, you know, for I don't know how long, but I'm not going to set a clock, because it just gets in my head. And there's stuff that I want to learn. You know, I try to make a list of like songs or solos or licks or anything that I want to learn from other people. You know, I've been into jazz lately, so it's like the past couple years trying to learn Charlie Parker songs, you know, and so that kind of stuff. You know, I just try to work on it every week and try to get better.
Well, it's working. What? I mean, I just gotta pause. I gotta say, like, it's so cool to be sitting here with you and getting to play music with you, and that, like, when we just, like, we started, you just, like, started blowing my mind the first second we started playing. This is awesome. I'm having an awesome time.
Well, right back at
dude,
you, man.
Thank
right
you.
Back at you.
I don't have that many more questions. Thank you all so much for being so patient. And you know, fortunately, you're incredibly interesting and funny and charming. What advice would you give to someone who wanted to be like you?
Reconsider. No. I feel very fortunate to be have the thing, you know, to be where I am in my life. And I would just say, you know, follow what inspires you, because there's a lot. It's music, and there can be a lot of stuff that gets in the way of that. And I think that is still the most important thing. It's just to find what inspires you and chase that. And it's a daily battle. It, you know, what inspired me yesterday may not inspire me today. So it's a constant struggle to figure out what that is. And sometimes I get stuck in a rut. And so, you know, we're all human. And I talk to a lot of people that will say that, you know, that, well, I don't pick up the guitar that much because I don't feel like I'm getting any better or this and that. But, I know you are. It's like, I know that everybody is. Just picking it up and playing, you know, it can be an instrument or doing whatever if it's painting or whatever you're doing. It's like, you just do it every day. It's kind of the way I am with songwriting. It's like, it's easy for me not to write because I didn't do it. And so now, you know, it's like I try to write. So that's something that I try to do, and just accept the fact that it may not always be great. And, you know, it's kind of like these, you know, if I'm doing a video for whatever, you know, it takes a long time to get a take that I'm okay with. And it's kind of like if I'm in the studio, you know, like I'll preface this by saying, you know, all our mine and Rob's records are all 100% live in the studio. You know, it's the vocals, the instrumentation, everything's live. There's not an overdub. The only overdubs would be like World Full of Blues, that record, we had a horn section on it. And those were all overdubs. Some of the backup vocals were overdubs. But as far as the core band, the core vocals, core musicians, nothing was overdubbed. And so I really like that. That's inspiring. But if I'm at home doing an overdub for somebody else, there's about 4,374 takes that, because I just, and it might be a note, you know, that just bugs me. I think that's another thing, is that most musicians are kind of perfectionists, and it's that inherently makes you work on it. And so just work on it. That would be what I would say to anybody that wants to do this, or that wants to really do anything. That kind of applies to whatever you're going to do. You know, if you've got a job, just work at it.
Just work at it. If you were able to sit across the table with your 15-year-old self, what would you tell yourself? Other than just work at it.
Just work at it. You know, I don't know. I would probably, and I think what I would say to my 15-year-old self, I'd probably say to my 32-year-old self, you know, is just follow what inspires you and don't be so hard on yourself. You know, and I think that's with everybody that plays music, is it goes back to that perfectionism thing. You can just sit, and that's why I like playing with other people too, is because the inspiration flows and you play better because of that. And it goes back to getting stuck in ruts or whatever when you're practicing. Another thing would just be, you know, I guess, you know, just keep going, because I never really stopped playing. It's never been anything that I've even thought about. But you know, there you can't help but doubt going into music as a job or a profession. You know, it's crazy. It's literal insanity.
Yeah, it's kind of complicated.
But, yeah. You know, it's great, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And, you know, so there's been a lot of cool things that have happened because of just sticking with it, you know.
Yeah. All right, lightning round. What do you hope for?
What do I hope for? Do I have to? This is lightning round. I have to answer this quick, right?
No. You can take your time. Okay. But the lightning round just means you're allowed to give me any. It doesn't have to be a special answer if you don't want it to be. But that is a question that begs for some depth. So have at it. What do you hope for?
I don't know. Be the fourth member of KISS, right?
That would be a waste of your talents, my friend.
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's. It's again. It's like I'm surprised with the IBMA thing. It's like I would vote for that. You know, but yeah, I hope to keep going. You know, and hope to keep doing this. Hope I don't fall and break my finger at a certain point.
Truth. What color is your front door?
What color? Oh man, what color is my front door?
It's a meaningless question, but I'm curious. Do you ever use your own front door?
I don't look at it that often.
You drive in the back?
It's white. No, it's black. It's a black front door.
That's a pretty big difference.
That is a pretty big difference. Yeah. Everything else around it is white. It's hard to explain.
What is something you learned from your father?
I learned a lot of things from my dad. I'm still learning from him. You know, he's a really hard-working guy. Yeah, he worked for the he just retired from the highway department. Where he was a mechanic for over 30 years. And, you know, he still in his retirement works harder in one day than I'll probably work in the next 10 years, you know. And he travels with me quite a bit, you know, anywhere that's driving distance. It's
excellent.
You know, so that's been cool. But definitely the hard work thing. And I think the perfectionism thing, that's why he quit playing the banjo. But no, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I've learned from dad, and I think those are two biggies. And to always be on time to stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
That's a biggie. Is like in the music business, you just little inside knowledge that you may not know. There's a lot of flaky musicians, and being on time is important. Wait, we were on the nose. I do think, you know, it's like the whole thing. On time is late. Early is on time.
Yeah, we used to say in the when we were in van tour, you know, if you were 5 minutes late to the van and there were six dudes in the van, then that was 30 minutes that you owed us that had just evaporated into nothingness.
Well, we did a tour with Taj Mahal last year.
Oh.
And he made a joke, but it was to this other band member that was late to soundcheck. And it was just that, you know, if you played in James Brown's band and you were a minute late, you know, you were docked like a week's pay for every minute that you were late, which is a little intense, but, you know, he had a great band.
He did. That's a fact. Two more questions. Is there anything that you're afraid of? yeah, I like your response.
Dobro players. No, I'm just
Oh, me too, man. You know what's funny about Dobro players is that they figured out real quickly that most bands don't have one, and so they show up and they're like, "Hey, you guys don't have a Dobro.
That's right.
Can I be in your band?" And you're like, "Oh yeah, okay. Sure, man." Coming from some I've always had a Dobro player. But you're not really afraid of Dobro players.
No. You know, I don't know. I would be. Are we going like, you know, animals or?
Some people say snakes. Some people say spiders. Some people say arthritis.
Snakes are pretty. Arthritis. That's a good one. That's a good one. I'm afraid of that because I have noticed it with my index finger.
I think so that was Beppe Gambetta's answer.
Yeah.
She said arthritis.
I'm afraid of having Keith Richards' fingers. Giant knots for.
All right. Finally, last question. What is it like? What is it that makes you happy?
You know, I mean, obviously playing guitar, but the biggest thing would be family. You know, it's like I've got, as I mentioned earlier, an 8-year-old and my wife, and that's the big thing is that, you know, having enough time off the road to be present at things and being present when you're present, you know, is a biggie. But that stuff makes me happy. And learning something new, you know. If I pick up a guitar and I learn something new, it makes me feel like I did when I was 10 and I learned how to play Wildwood Flower the first time. It's like that feeling has never gone away. And, you know, listening to stuff makes me happy. Again, I kind of go back to that. The first record I bought with my own money was Flatten Scruggs Live at Carnegie Hall. And I remember how I felt. It was like you were there. You know, if anybody that's heard that record, the moment you hear that cowbell in the audience, you're there. And it's like that just really hit me. And I remember when somebody gave me a cassette tape of Tony Rice, Manzanita, and hearing that kickoff. And so I still kind of chase that. You know, it's those moments don't happen as often. Because, you know, at this point, you've exhausted a lot of different kind of genres and albums and. But I still listen to music all the time, and I've got a record player in the living room, and so I just like to listen to music, and that would be the big things.
That's awesome.
And
thanks.
Being here, playing with Travis. Play.
The first time we ever played together was up here on the mountain at the first ever North Carolina Guitar Celebration. And I got to play with this man and Jerry Douglas, and it was awesome. I had a moment, having a moment thinking about it, actually. And this is one of the tunes we did, so we'll do this for you.
What you got? I'm coming home, baby. Oh, what you got? And I don't mean, baby, been thinking about you. And I'm on my way. Don't sell the house, I don't wreck the car. And stay there, honey, right where you are. Oh, what you got? I'm coming home, stay. Well, in my mind, I can see that's a pretty good sign that I need you. And that's why I can't wait to get back home. So squeeze yourself real good and tight, and I'll be there. there before daylight. If you're all what you got, come in home, stay. Oh, what you got? I'm coming home, baby. Oh, what you got? And I don't mean, baby, been thinking about you, and I'm on my way. Don't sell the house and don't wreck the car. Stay there, honey, right where you are. Oh, what you got? I'm coming home, stay. I'm going to stay. Well, we won't fight. Say we won't fight. And this time things are going to be all right. Oh, what you got? I'm coming home to stay. Oh, what you got? I'm coming home, baby. Oh, what you got? And I don't mean, baby, been thinking about you. And I'm on my way. Don't sell the house and don't wreck the car. Stay there, honey, right where you are. Oh, what you got? I'm coming home to stay.
Thank you so much. Once again, Trey Hensley. Hope you all have a great night.
Thank you all very much. And Travis Book.
This has been the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. Thanks for listening. Huge thanks to Trey Hensley, Thompson Guitars, Americana Vibes, and The Bluegrass Situation. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe and leave a positive review. It really helps us out. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Travis Book Happy Hour and online at thetravisbookhappyhour.com. And remember, it's okay to be happy.